Welcome to Talking About Organizations, a podcast on organization and management studies graciously supported by our listeners, Management Learning, and the European Group for Organization Studies. This is a supplement to episode 92, a case study of the Manhattan Project and its illustrations of organizational secrecy. We wanted to look at what organizations might decide to keep from outside observation, why, how they might accomplish it, and to what extent they succeed. The Manhattan Project devised, developed, and tested the world's first nuclear weapons before their employment in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan. It came about following the discovery of nuclear fission in 1938 and an understanding that Nazi Germany was trying to develop a powerful weapon that could change the course of the war. It was a massive project, costing $2 billion in 1945, or $25 billion in today's dollars, with three main sites working on different requirements, from uranium separation to the bomb's design. The focus of our case study was the best-known site, Los Alamos in central New Mexico, now home to several museums dedicated to preserving the Manhattan Project story. We watched two videos. The first was The Day After Trinity, a film released in 1980 that tells the story of the Manhattan Project largely through the perspective of its leading scientist, J. Robert Oppenheimer. The title refers to the Trinity site in New Mexico, where the first nuclear test occurred, and Oppenheimer's response to a question posed to him 20 years later about the need to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons, to which Oppenheimer responded, "It's 20 years too late. It should have been done the day after Trinity." The second documentary was Los Alamos from Below, in which a 1975 lecture by Richard Feynman is overlaid with pictures from Los Alamos and its key figures. Feynman provided a humorous look at the attempts at secrecy and the various ways some got around the rules. The American effort had to be kept secret to hide both the existence of the project and, failing that, any information about progress and potential employment. For this reason, the project's locations were remote. Physical isolation was maintained through barbed wire fences. Yet of greater note were the professional and social barriers erected to keep the scientists and support workers firmly within the narrow scope of their duties, informed mainly on a need-to-know basis. The scientists who worked in the project were accustomed to open collaboration within professional channels. But there was another source of internal tension, which was the backgrounds and perceived questionable allegiances of some of the scientists. While serving as professors in academia, Oppenheimer and other physicists had ties with members of the Communist Party in America, a fact that would put them under scrutiny by the military handlers overseeing parts of the project. Now, although the aim was the development of a powerful and devastating weapon, perhaps a dark topic, morale was rather high. The excitement came through the scientific opportunities that were afforded, and because of the existential threat that Nazi Germany posed should the Germans have succeeded in developing the weapon first. As for the military and other non-scientists working at Los Alamos, support for the war effort and trust in the government were paramount. Signs and banners warning that loose lips sinks ships were everywhere, instilling a strong desire to follow the rules. However, some of the rules made more sense than others. Again, the Feynman lecture offered several humorous examples where he was at odds with the male censors who would cut out or blacken what they, perhaps incorrectly, deemed to be sensitive information. There was also excitement because of not knowing how everything would turn out. There were speculations that a nuclear explosion could destroy all of New Mexico or set the atmosphere on fire. Hence, when the first test at the Trinity site near Los Alamos proved successful and a nuclear weapon could be built, there was tremendous relief. Some of the questions that the case raises include what constitute legitimate and illegitimate reasons for maintaining secrecy or classifying information as requiring protection from disclosure. How does one design organizations that balance the needs of secrecy on the one hand, but allow relevant boundary spanning and collaboration on the other so the task can be completed? And finally, there's a question as to whether the Manhattan Project serves as a model for other large-scale scientific innovations to solve today's problems. Or, as various authors have asked over the years, do we need a Manhattan Project for? Pick something. Curing cancer, developing alternative energy, stopping global warming, and so on. It is an interesting question and perhaps fodder for debate, but one must consider the conditions of the time of the Manhattan Project, one where organizational secrecy was vital to the project's overall success. And that's all for now. We invite you to listen to the episode, available in two parts on our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. or through your favorite podcast streaming service. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their generous support and the support of our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening and have a great day.